Imagine a better world we can all work towards. What if all children can look forward to a bright future full of opportunities? What role can you, me, and our organizations play in realizing this vision? Hi, welcome to the What If podcast from the IKEA Foundation. My name is Altaf Makhiawala. On the eve of the IKEA Foundation's 10th year anniversary event, we decided to bring our CEO, Per Hegenes, onto this podcast so you can get to know him a little bit better. So welcome, Per.
Thank you.
What If is a big theme that's been running through our podcast series, and it's also the theme of our anniversary conference. So let me start off by asking you, what if you could fix one thing about the world today? What would it be?
There's no question about what that would be. It would have to be climate change and the threat that the climate change poses to our world and our planet. And that's part of the reason why we have a very strong focus on that in the foundation. The interesting thing about climate change is that we have a lot of solutions. We know how we can mitigate climate change. But we have another threat in the world, which we also focus on, and that's the threat of lack of jobs and the fact that we have a very strong population growth in certain parts of the world, and we're not producing the number of jobs that are needed for young people to get into to work, make a living, and feed a family. So it's really two different challenges. But I think the most important challenge is definitely climate change, because that drives everything else.
Ladies and gentlemen, please give a great SE4 forum welcome to the CEO of the IKEA Foundation, Per Hegenes.
Hi. Oh. So when I was asked to start the IKEA Foundation,
right, and so what's the personal motivation in making this happen for you?
Well, I was very lucky to be born in a good place. I had a lot of opportunities. I grew up in a wealthy country. I could go to school, go to college, and I could choose for myself what I wanted to do with my life. Now, we know that opportunity is not equally distributed, but talent is. So my philosophy is that if we can contribute as a foundation to understand how we can create more opportunities for people who were not as lucky as me to be born into a country with a lot of opportunities, then that's the best way for me to actually focus my time.
And which country is this, Per?
I was born and raised in Norway before I left 25 years ago, and I will go back at some point.
Okay, and whereabouts in Norway did you grow up?
I grew up right outside of Oslo and was able to enjoy a very good upbringing.
And what was childhood like?
Childhood was like going to school, doing sports, spending time in the nature, and learning how to appreciate what we have. Having said that, I don't think I was able to appreciate it as much as I am today when I have traveled the world, spent 200 days every year on the road, and understand what kind of environment other people are forced to grow up in. It's very good to see your own country from the outside and get a perspective on how lucky you were to be able to grow up in a place like that.
You mentioned that you have a new perspective on your own country now that you've traveled and seen the world and seen the challenges that many people face today. So what infuriates you most about the world in 2019?
What infuriates me the most is the fact that we don't seem to be able to get around the problem of increased inequality in the world. We talk a lot about it. We know it's happening. But we don't seem to have good strategies for how to solve it. And we know that increased inequality will end up in frustration for many and create a lot of problems that we don't have today, or exacerbated some of the problems we're already dealing with.
Global income has grown over the past four decades, but so has income inequality in nearly every region of the world. Huge growth in Asia.
Globalization has been an interesting development. Capitalism is an important driver for growth and development. But we know that capitalism and globalization hasn't worked for everyone. So what we do not seem to be able to do, but what we have to do, is try to find a way around that so that we can ensure that everyone has an equal opportunity to create a future for themselves and for their families. And in order to do that, it's important to understand where these people are coming from, the kind of barriers they meet, the kind of difficulties they see on a day-to-day basis. So I spend a lot of time when I'm out traveling, talking to people, understanding their situation, and then understanding better out of that how we as a foundation can help these people to create a better life for themselves. I know at the end of my life, I will not ask myself how many countries I was able to go to, but I will think about all the interesting people I was able to meet and to speak to and to understand better their role in society, their challenges, and their ability to look at life in a way that I might not have even thought about before I started the traveling and started to talk to all these people around the world. So that's been extremely rewarding for me in this role.
Now that you've talked about this, could you just tell me a little bit about what gets you excited about the work that we do at the foundation?
First of all, I'm excited about the fact that we can enable people to help themselves to a better life. We're not in the business of providing aid and support as such. We're in the business of making it possible for people to get the necessary resources needed, whether it's about education, about skills development, about loans, financial support that enables them to take care of their own future and build their own life. That's very exciting. Secondly, I'm very excited about the fact that we are able as a foundation to really think outside of the box. We can help drive innovation and new thinking. We can develop models for organizations of our kind to think differently about how you drive development, how you create results for people. And we can contribute to systems change. That is a key part of what we try to do as a foundation, to leverage the funds that we have available to create a better life for the many people.
And it's interesting, Per, that we have the 10th anniversary conference coming up for the foundation. But at the same time, it's also a big milestone for you personally. You celebrate 10 years with the foundation. Can you tell us a little bit from those 10 years, an anecdote which you think has had an enormous sense of achievement for you? An example, perhaps, or a story?
We probably worked with 100 partners, different partners over the 10 years in different capacities in 40 to 50 different countries. So I've been privileged to see a lot of great results and great achievements, which were made possible through all the different partners that we work with, all the smart people who work tirelessly and passionately to help people who need it.
This is Kobe Refugee Camp. It's one of the five sites that make up Dolo Ado in eastern Ethiopia and is one of the largest refugee camps in the world. More than 200,000 people live here, over half of whom are children. All of them have escaped violence, war, and famine, and are now living in extremely harsh conditions.
If I think about one time where I really felt a huge achievement, I think it's when we achieved creating jobs for thousands of families in a refugee situation in the south of Ethiopia, where we work with refugees and host community to enable them to become self-reliant, where we have made it possible for them to build a livelihood for themselves, to get access to financial resources, to farm the land in an area which is basically a desert area, where we contributed resources to build irrigation systems, where we have 2,000 families farming the land. I think when I saw that we were able, as part of this big investment, to turn desert land into fertile area, when I stand there and see the green crops as far as I can see, and the happy host community and refugees working together and having an opportunity to get three crops a year out of land that was infertile and just dry desert, that's a sense of achievement, because I know that these people have now the basis to be self-reliant and make a future for themselves without our help.
And how did the foundation and yourself play a role in enabling that?
In this case, we worked with our partner, UNHCR, the High Commissioner for Refugees, and we said to them that in the case of Dolo Ado, which this is called, we have a situation where people will probably be staying for a very long time. You know, the average refugee stays in the camp for 20 years, normally not able to work, not able to leave the camp. Being idle in the camp is not good for anyone. Creates a lot of frustration, creates a lot of lost opportunities. So we said, can we try to have a focus on self-reliance? Can we build livelihoods for these people? Can we work with the government locally and centrally to allow these people to work, to build a community together with the local people where they can share the goods and share the outcome of the farming and the other opportunities in that area, create a society that is operating like any other society, but with a combination of host community and refugees working together. This was made possible because our partner UNHCR and our money and our idea to try to find a way for these people to create a sustainable solution for themselves, especially because in this case, we will probably not see people going home anytime soon. So in the meantime, having them integrated with the community and providing value to the local community instead of being a net beneficiary has changed the lives of these people. Our focus is on children and youth, enabling them to have a better life. But we believe that if we can enable young people to be skilled to have a job, for young people to become entrepreneurs, and they can make a living and make an income and increase their family wealth, they will invest that family wealth in their children's health and education. So our focus is ultimately on improving the opportunities for children and youth, but we do it indirectly by helping the parents improve their family wealth and helping the parents come to a position where they can decide what's best for their children.
So, Per, you've said you've done hundreds of trips a year and you've seen many programs where our partners are doing some incredible work in the field. And you've met so many people from all walks of life talking to you, sharing the aspirations. Is there a moment, a memorable one, that even stays with you today after all these years?
You know, in the early days of the foundation, we actually did a lot of work with refugees, as I've alluded to earlier, in different parts of the world. And there's one experience that I will never forget. I was in a refugee camp in Kenya.
In a remote part of northwest Kenya lies a sprawling mass of little iron-roofed houses. This is Kakuma Refugee Camp, established a quarter of a century ago and located in Kakuma Town, Turkana County.
And I was sitting at a presentation that a team was giving to me outside in one part of the camp. And a little girl comes up to me, a four-year-old girl, and she looks at this strange white man who was definitely the only white man in the area and wondered what he was there for and why he was sitting there in the camp where she lived. So I later tried to find out who is this girl and what is it that makes her so interested. And I looked up her history and I understood that her mom was from Rwanda. She just escaped the genocide in Rwanda in 1994. Her dad came from Burundi, which is a neighboring country. And he escaped forced military recruitment. And they met in the Kakuma refugee camp in Kenya in 1996. 20 years later, they still live in the Kakuma refugee camp in Kenya. They have three children together. And this little girl was one of their daughters. And she was smiling, very excited, because she was born and raised in a camp. So that was the life she understood. But her parents understand that this is not a life to offer a child, not being able to do what every other child takes for granted in types of getting an education, being given opportunities and build a life for themselves.
How old was she when you met her?
She was 4 years old when I met her.
And have you met her again?
Several times.
Oh, wow. And tell us more about that.
Well, I made a point to look up the family whenever I traveled to Kenya and was in the neighborhood of this refugee camp. And of course, I followed the family and the kids growing up in the camp. And in the end, this family was very lucky because they were among the few selected families who were offered to resettle to another country. And the family lives in Minneapolis in the United States today. But we shouldn't forget that they spent the first 25 years in a refugee camp.
And how old is she today and what is she doing?
She's 12 and she goes to school.
Wow. And going back to those early years, Per, the foundation itself, what was it like when you started 10 years ago? Did people even know the foundation existed?
So when the board decided to establish an administration for the foundation and increase the giving, we didn't start from scratch because we had the opportunity to build upon the very good work done by an organization called IKEA Social Initiative, led by an IKEA manager called Marianne Barner. The social initiative was established after IKEA experienced child labor issues in their supply chain in India and Pakistan. And as a socially very responsible company like IKEA, the company asked itself, we can probably make sure that there's no children working in the supply chain, but it doesn't necessarily do anything to address the root causes of child labor. So therefore, the IKEA Social Initiative started talking to organizations like UNICEF and Save the Children to learn more about what they could do to address these root causes and ensure that children don't go to work, but children go and have an education and experience the childhood that they're supposed to, the kind of childhood that we take for granted.
And what were some of the initial challenges you faced when you came on board?
Well, we had the opportunity to build upon the IKEA Social Initiative work and the work they'd done to prevent child labor in the supply chain and enable kids to have an opportunity to go to school. Now, beyond that, we wanted to stand out as a foundation and do something different, just like IKEA has always stood out and done something different in their space. And since I had the benefit of having the founder of IKEA, Ingvar Kamprad, working with me on this as the chairman of the foundation, we spent a lot of time thinking about what is the IKEA way to develop a foundation to help children and youth living in vulnerable communities.
What was, could you share a little bit about some of the first initial conversations you had with Ingvar about the foundation?
Well, Ingvar wanted to do things big, as he has done with IKEA. He wanted us to really set the mark. He wanted us to work in areas that people haven't necessarily worked before. He wanted us to challenge the usual way of doing things. He wanted us to take risk. He wanted us to go and find partners who could work with us to do things differently and create more value, just the way he's always worked with IKEA to make IKEA better and more competitive than any other company. So our discussions would go along those lines. And my focus was always about doing responsible grant making, making sure that we took this opportunity and made the absolute most out of it, which is always linked to innovation and linked to efficiency and making sure we get as much out of every dollar as we can.
And Ingvar has passed on, but any last conversations did you have with him before he passed away?
I had frequent discussions with Ingvar about the foundation work and about how we developed as a foundation. Also after he stepped down as chairman of the foundation and wasn't so involved in the day-to-day life. I remember the discussions we had in the early days when we were sitting in his office in Switzerland and sitting around his office table and throwing ideas back and forth across the table. And it's funny because they moved that whole office to the museum in Elmholt. So I can go to Elmholt to the museum and see the chair I sat in when I discussed these things with Ingvar, which I think is kind of nice because it sort of keeps him still alive. And, you know, for Ingvar, the most important thing was that all the co-workers at IKEA could be proud of the work that we do in the foundation together with all the great partners we have. That was his number one priority. He always kept reminding me that I want the co-workers to be proud of the work you do.
So it seems like there's a seamless connection between what you had in terms of the initial ideas and vision of Ingvar and then now unveiling the new strategy in 2019, which focuses so much on affording a better life while protecting the planet. Is that right?
Absolutely. We have looked at what we have done and we looked at where is it that we can have a real impact as a foundation if we focus and what are the things that we need to do in order to help address those two big challenges that we discussed earlier. And you can see it's an extension from what we have done before, but with a much stronger focus. And refugees will always be part of this, but instead of looking at this as a humanitarian situation, we look at it as a development situation, and we combined the refugees and host community to create a development situation that is sustainable and creates a future for people.
In those early years, Per, what kept you awake at night, given the solutions that were there existing, the challenges that you had in front of you, and the resources you had on hand?
Well, on one side, it was really the excitement about the opportunities that we had as a foundation to make a difference to millions of children. On the other hand, I was recruited into this job coming out of business, and I had very little knowledge about development work, humanitarian work, and philanthropy as such. So it was a steep hill to climb for me. And what kept me awake was, how can I attract people who are smarter than me, people who can help me develop this foundation and turn it into a world-class foundation that we can be proud of, that IKEA can be proud of, and that people talk about as a foundation that really makes a difference.
I think you've touched on this, Per, a little bit earlier, but I just wanted to get a sense from you on how do you plan to deliver on this new shift in strategy by the foundation?
We want to find ways to help as many young people living in vulnerable communities to create a job for themselves or become entrepreneurs so they can increase their income and invest in their children's health and education.
You mean vulnerable to poverty or vulnerable to climate change?
Both. Vulnerability comes in different ways. I do think that if you have no opportunity to make a living for yourself, you will have to look for ways to go somewhere else to find that opportunity. We would like people to have the opportunity to do that where they are born and raised, and create those livelihood opportunities will then lead to a better life for people, also those who live in rural areas. Now, it's also about vulnerability to climate change, because climate change fundamentally changes the opportunities for many people living in these areas. It brings with it droughts, difficulties in doing what people used to do. Drought will not only prevent people from farming the land and making a good living out of that, but it also prevents people from growing the food that we need for a growing population.
Energy
is an enabler for all the other SDGs.
Energy empowers people.
And is there a particular project under the new strategy that really stands out for you?
One project that I think we should be proud of is a project that started early in 2014, and it built up to the conference in Paris in 2015 in December. We had 2 years left, and the purpose of this program was to see how we can bring the seven leading climate NGOs together, have them draft one common strategy, and work towards the best possible outcome for Paris. Now, Paris was an important milestone for everyone concerned about climate change, but it's just the beginning of something that needs to get much more dynamic, much more ambitious, in order for us to limit the global warming to 1.5 degrees.
The dawn of the clean energy revolution has arrived. Affordable electricity,
powered by the sun.
The coalition's name is Women in Business, and a large focus on that coalition was to enable businesses to set science-based targets for themselves, how they would reduce their carbon footprint, and then be very vocal about this so we can drag on other businesses to come and do exactly the same thing, believing that if business takes climate change seriously and commits to driving down their own footprint, others will do the same and it will make a real difference.
It's interesting you say that because we just had a few weeks ago Steve Howard leading on Beam in Business talking to us on this very podcast. It's our very first podcast that we did at the foundation. So there is a complementarity in terms of what you're saying and what he was saying. So it's always good for listeners to go back and listen to the first one.
Well, Steve Howard was absolutely central in making that Beam in Business coalition happening, because his background was obviously from the climate group and having spent most of his life in focusing on climate issues. So we were able to draw a lot of help from Steve in setting this up and a lot of inspiration from Steve in setting it up. And therefore, because of his involvement in this, I think we and the coalition were more successful than otherwise would have been the case. But it's just the beginning. We have a long way to go, and we still work with the coalition, and our activities in climate action and renewable energy have expanded significantly since that point in time. It was a very interesting start, and it was a very risky project.
And going back to risk, what keeps you awake at night these days now that we are unveiling a new strategy? 10 years on, of course.
10 years on, 10 years is still a very young age for a foundation. And we still have a long way to go in improving on what we do. And especially with the new strategy, we are just at the start. And what keeps me awake at night is, are we able to do the right thing? Are we able to get the most out of those funds that we have received from the successful business called IKEA? Are we able to take those funds and maximize the impact for the many people?
So Per, a lot of our IKEA Foundation partners will be present at the anniversary conference in June. What are some of the expectations that you have that you want people present at that anniversary conference to take away with them?
I want every partner coming to our event to take away two things. First of all, celebrate with us the achievements that we have had in our partnership through the last 10 years. You have to remember, we are not doing anything ourselves. We fund the partnership, but it's the partners that really make things work. They are the ones who put in their expertise, their knowledge, their passion to achieve what we're trying to achieve together. The second thing is to build a coalition of people who wants to be with us and collaborate on making our new strategy come alive. Have a number of partners constantly give us insights and inspiration and ideas for how we can succeed with our new strategy. If I can achieve those two things in a half-day event, I will be very happy.
And perhaps as a final thought, Per, could you share, you know how things can be very difficult for an individual who wants to shift the needle on systemic change in the world today. What keeps you motivated in your current role?
I have to take it back to the people. It's the smart, competent, motivated, and passionate people working for IKEA Foundation, working for all our partners, that really makes it interesting and very exciting to think about all the great things that we can do together on the back of a great brand called IKEA and on the back of a great business that continues to provide profits that we can invest in helping make lives better for children across the world. So I'm really looking forward to meeting all the different partners who have decided to come to our 10-year anniversary event and celebrate the results so far, and then explore the opportunities to work together for the future on the back of the new strategy. And I have to close by just saying what Ingvar always used to say in a closing like this, most things remain to be done. What a glorious future.
Thanks for coming on this podcast, Per. Thanks for your time.
It was a pleasure. Nice talking to you.
You have been listening to Per Hegenes, the CEO of IKEA Foundation. This is Altaf Makhiawala. Thank you for listening. This is the end of our short first season. We will be back after the summer with a new series. But before I go, I want to leave you with a last what-if question to ponder over. What if we all work together to create a brighter future for all children?